Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We're the fourth winningest franchise in the league since 2000. All right, that means in the upper quartile of winners, we're in the top quartile of that upper quartile. That's rare air.
Hello and welcome back to the Upper Quartile Podcast. I am your host, Jim Aiello, and I am joined by the Athletic's Indianapolis Colts beat writer, James Boyd. James, the draft is over. As you said, the first thing you said to me this morning was, no more big boards, baby.
I am free. Free.
It's, you know what, and like I said, the pre-draft process is a grind, it's grueling or whatever, and it's a lot of guesswork, and it's not my favorite thing because you don't know. This is why I love post-draft, because now you get to look at the team, you get to, you know, it's speculation still, but you get to see, like, all right, how's this guy going to impact the team? What holes do they still have? Like, what are they going to do this, this, and this? Like, you can kind of judge the offseason as a whole right now. Obviously, maybe a couple moves coming still, but I just love this part of the offseason because now you got to see the vision, you know? You get to see what Chris Ballard and his staff and the front office, Shane Steichen, what they wanted to do, what they accomplished, and then what they didn't. So we're going to get into some draft storylines in a minute, but yeah, zoom out for a minute here. I mean, where are you on the Colts as an offseason goes? Did you feel like they accomplished, well, again, we'll get into a lot of this later in the podcast, but do you kind of feel like they accomplished some of the goals they set out to in the beginning of the offseason?
I do think that they've accomplished some of the goals. Maybe not in the totality that I would have liked to see, but I think the Latu pick is obviously a huge one because he is a beast, and we'll get into it, but had it not been for the neck injury stuff, he probably would have gone in the top 10. Like, he was that special at UCLA. So I think adding him elevates this pass rush and sort of helps them, you know, keep pace or potentially gain some ground in the AFC South and in the AFC in general, which, you know, you need pass rushers to change the game when you have so many gifted quarterbacks in your conference. And then, you know, obviously they mentioned, or Chris Ballard mentioned before the draft, they wanted to become more explosive. I think Latu is explosive. And then also, you know, A.D. Mitchell from Texas is the definition of explosive. I mean, RAS score, relative athletic score, was a 9.99 out of 10. And so you give that, you know, type of athleticism, big playability, big moments as well throughout his career to Anthony Richardson and his offense. I think that gives him another element. And so from that standpoint, they did get more explosive on both sides of the ball. But there are still some other needs that we'll probably get into as well. But I think I wrote this actually after the draft in my draft takeaways. This was not the firework offseason some people maybe wanted to see, where they swing for the fences and sign a bunch of outside players and spend a ton of money on people that are new to the building and they're going all in, you know, all chips in the Jim Irsay voice. But no, this was not necessarily that. I think this is still them sort of not hedging in a sense, but they're still being the conservative Colts that they've always been underneath Chris Ballard. And he takes pride in building this team through the draft. And my biggest takeaway from all this was like, two things, Jim, was one, you've put a ton of pressure on Anthony Richardson. I don't think there's any doubt about that, even though you've, you know, given him some help. We'll get into that. But number two, this team or this draft class is really top heavy, and it's going to be reliant on the top two guys really having an immediate impact. I think that will determine how far this team goes. Not like they're the main reason, because Anthony is going to be the main reason no matter what, but how quickly they can get acclimated to the NFL, how quickly they can have an impact in the NFL, that will certainly be a factor in how far this team can go and if they can end this three-year playoff drought. Because, you know, Chris Ballard has been saying, you know, they're trying to win the division, they're trying to be competitive. That all sounds good, but you also are, you know, relying heavily on some young players. So I'm just at this point, I'm excited to see these guys get on the field for rookie minicamp, talk to them, meet them in person. Obviously, Latu came and spoke to us, but it's not the same when, you know, you got them out there in pads and they're more in their element. Because I feel like, you know, it's a lot of, you know, dog and pony show, look at what we got, that type of thing. Not a bad thing. I think it's obviously special to be celebrated in that way. But it is also cool when, you know, the cliche is, oh, every player says, I just want to get to work. Well, when they get to work, then you get to ask them more about the work, the football aspect of it. And I think that'll be exciting as well. So looking forward to seeing some of those guys here, you know, in a bit when rookie minicamp starts up on the 10th.
Yeah, for sure. I think yeah, offseason as a whole, I feel like I think a lot of Colts fans would have preferred Chris Ballard to be more aggressive, but not typically what he does. I will say, if I was trying to be complimentary, and maybe this is a backhanded compliment, I guess, but like no missteps. That's what I felt like. Didn't make any mistakes. Brought back the guys he needed to bring back, paid the guys he needed to pay. You know, everyone on the Colts seems happy in terms of the key players, the Buckners, the Zaire Franklins, the Jonathan Taylors, Michael Pittman. Like, these guys are paid. They're happy. They're ready to contribute again next season. So no missteps. I don't think there's anything we would look back on this offseason and say, man, what the heck was Ballard thinking? I don't know if that's a backhanded compliment or not, but that's kind of what I'm looking at. That's like the first thing I think with the offseason, along with what you said about putting a lot of pressure on Anthony Richardson. But we are here to talk about the NFL draft. So we're going to do that and the way the Colts approach the NFL draft. And we're going to do it with a draft. What we're going to do is look at the biggest storylines coming out of the Colts draft. I think you guys can guess some of them. I'm going to kind of run through what they are, and then James and I are going to draft them, what we think are the biggest storylines. James is going to have the first pick because he's younger and prettier than me, so he gets to do that. Obviously we're not going to do the pick so much. We're going to do storylines. So one is Latu. I'm going to get that right. Sorry about that.
No problem. It took me a while to, you know, kind of get it rolling off the tongue, you know.
The pass rush that he adds to the Colts, the pick, and you know, some of the other choices they might have had at that spot. The number, again, these are not in order. This is just the, you know, the things that we're talking about. The potential trade up for an offensive player. The A.D. Mitchell being angry about having to wait as long as he had, you know, slash Chris Ballard being angry about the character concerns. Quote, and I put those character concerns in quotes. No cornerback until the 6th round, and not really an outside corner at that. The offensive line talent that they added kind of quietly on day 2 and day 3 here. That's going to be something we talk about. And then James, if we have time, we'll get into some of the fun he had with the interviews with these guys on the Zoom calls. But we'll see how much time we have if we can get to that. But so without further ado, the start of the upper quartile draft, podcast draft. James, what was your biggest storyline, your biggest takeaway from the NFL draft? Number one pick. No pressure here, buddy. You got to get it right.
Ooh, my biggest takeaway was the first pick. It's pretty obvious. Latu. And I say this because, not because of necessarily his position, but just his background. I think, obviously, the first thing all of us, you know, were looking at when we were searching through the beast, which, by the way, is very supported by people who are not, you know, athletic employees. So shout out to Dane Brugler for, you know, I think our entire draft room was logging into his stuff and looking at it. So Dane, you're the man. But one of the biggest things we saw, obviously, was the neck injury in November 2020, the neck surgery, cervical fusion surgery in 2021, March 2021, 2 years away from football, trying to get medically cleared, comes back, balls out. And so while we see all of the statistics, the stats, the production, the just tape as well, I mean, the guy is really elite at getting to the pass. I mean, getting to the passer. But the neck part was kind of alarming. And I'm not going to lie, initially I was thinking, oh, wow, like this guy must be really, really, really good for them to take a swing on him given the medical history. And then my second thought was, unlike some people might have freaked out on Twitter, was that they had to be absolutely sure that his neck would be fine, because this is how I look at it. And I try not to make it so transactional, because I do think that it's important to get to know the players as people, and you all know that, it shows in my work. But looking at it in a vacuum, they're investing millions of dollars in this young man. And no one would do that if they have an inkling that it could not work, or that he cannot last, or that it's going to be an injury reoccurrence. So he even talked about that, you know, because after a very dominant season at UCLA in 2022, he could have come out and went to the draft. But from what I understand, he was basically like, you know, your draft style or told. And he was basically in a sense of, I can go out now and probably get drafted. But if I come back and have 2 full years away from injury, you know, really prove it's not a fluke, prove that I can stay healthy. He didn't miss a game since coming back from this neck injury, by the way. And so I think the 2 years on tape, the production, obviously the medical records made them okay with it, but definitely alarming at first. And then him being the first defensive player drafted. I mean, if I had to pick, we were all sitting there in the media room, you know, hey, who's it going to be? At that point, I figured it probably would be an edge rusher because probably a little bit more valuable than a cornerback at 15, given how the board fell, and you can have your pick of the litter. I thought it was going to be Dallas Turner. Just because, you know, he's SEC Defensive Player of the Year, number one, you know, edge rusher on our, you know, big board, on Dane's big board. But if you look at, again, the production and things like that, and I truly believe if Latu hadn't had the injury history, maybe he would have been higher, like, on my list of players the Colts were going to be targeting at that spot, because it was a bit of a surprise for me. But then when I got into, like, what they need, you know, how good of a player he is, high character kid, all those things. It makes sense. So, that's definitely my number one storyline because, I mean, he's the number one pick. And there's always that thought, even with, you know, so much offensive talent going off the board, do you give Anthony Richardson another playmaker or someone, you know, to help him in that first round? Do you take a Brian Thomas Jr. and kind of supercharge your offense? But I think that, you know, if it weren't for the injury, a lot of fans probably wouldn't even be, like, upset about this pick. But he's a good player. He's a great player, actually. And probably, and not even probably, he is the most productive defensive player Chris Ballard has ever drafted. And also, he's tied, I believe, for the highest player, defensive player he's drafted as well. You know, so we'll see how it turns out. But that's definitely my number one storyline because he's the player that's going to make the most or the biggest impact in year one. And if he does, that could change a lot of things for this team. Obviously, you know, I think back to that Houston season finale, you know, CJ Stroud got hit 3 times. You need somebody to put more hands on him in big moments. And Latu is the guy to do that against him and others.
We're going to keep going on this storyline because one thought I thought you were going to get to is part of this big part of your storyline was Kwity Paye and Dio Odangbo.
Yeah.
And again, competent, solid edge rushers. And not to discount Ebukam, he's a good edge rusher, but he's a veteran and kind of was brought more of a mercenary in this situation. So I'm not really talking about him. That's what I was wondering about. It's one of the main impacts I was thinking was, what does this do to these guys? And again, I live in the Howie Roseman world of you can't have too many edge rushers. Like, and I think Chris Ballard likes to live in this world too, but has not necessarily been as successful as guys like Howie Roseman and John Lynch at doing this. So do you think, I'm teasing a story that James is going to be writing very soon, but do you think this was some sort of, man, I don't even know what the word would be. Do you think this was a reflection on what Kwity Paye and Dio Odangbo have or have not done with the Colts so far?
I think so, and I think this is more of a Kwity Paye question because he was the first-round pick. He does have the fifth-year option kind of looming over his head, and I'll write about that in depth. You all will be able to read that tomorrow morning on The Athletic, but I just think that it's a lot of money to pay somebody $13.4 million, and it also probably isn't an ideal situation for Kwity Paye to be in if you draft someone at my same exact position in the first round. So that's where I go back and forth. Like, you know, should they pick up the option? Should they not? He's been good, but he hasn't been great. But, you know, could he take another leap this year? Like, if he balls out this year, do you save money, you know, because you picked up the option? That's what makes this deadline so interesting, is because you just don't know. It's not one of those things where, you know, you have until after the season to decide if you want a franchise tag or something like that. Like, that's not going to happen. But that fifth-year option is looming. And I think overall, this does speak to Chris Ballard and the team's feeling about their defensive ends and their homegrown defensive ends, maybe not taking that extra leap to the status of eliteness. And
yeah, for sure.
That's the thing. Like, I can't say that Bala missed on Kwity Paye or missed on Dial Dangbo. I think these are good players. They're not great players. And he even admitted himself, you know, tongue in cheek, that they went after Daniil Hunter as well. Didn't get him. 29-year-old pass rusher, not a 23-year-old like Laiatu. So looking at their, you know, failed attempt to get Daniil Hunter, and then their attempt, obviously now, and their successful attempt to land Laiatu Latu, it kind of speaks to maybe that they don't think that these guys are going to get all that much better. And that's a fair assessment, I think, because when you're going into your fourth season, it's fair to wonder how much more growth is left in you and when do you sort of plateau and the player you are is the player you are. You know what I mean? Like, there's only so many times we can talk about your upside until, you know, so much time passes that there's not much upside or realistic chances of you making this leap. Now, there's obviously exceptions to the rules, but usually we get to that fourth, fifth season, which, you know, both players are entering year four, Pay and Odangbo. It's not, you know, cut and dry that they're going to just go out there and have these explosive seasons. And so I think it was smart for the Colts to try to upgrade that unit. And they had to, in my opinion, because even with the Indianapolis record, you know, 51 sacks last season, we talked about this. It felt like they didn't have enough big plays, not sacks, you know, just general QB pressure, hits, sacks, whatever you want to call it. They didn't have enough of those when it really, really, really mattered the most. And so I think that this is where Olatu can come in and be someone that changes the game, changes the landscape of the competition, changes the landscape of the field, changes their schemes, because you have to account for him. Because, I mean, quite honestly, on the edge, in, like, you know, it's obvious pass situations on third down, he's going to win. And so I think that, and then the last point I'll make is, I know I went back and forth with some, you know, commenters and readers, and I appreciate you all engaging with my content, but they're not going to change this defensive scheme overnight. You're not going to see some crazy changes. So I'm not saying I agree necessarily with everything Gus Bradley does on defense, but I'm saying if they're confident enough to keep him back, bring him back, which they've done, they're not going to change his system. So the only other way to maybe change your production in it is to change your personnel, which they did to hopefully kind of jumpstart that defensive line, which I still think, you know, even without Latu, was probably one of their best units. But with him, they're trying to move from good to elite. And so we'll see how it goes, because Chris Ballard seems very high on it. He said it's the best it's been since he's been there. But now they got to prove it, obviously, on the field.
I think that's fair. I actually don't, again, I don't think he's wrong. I think this is the best defensive line that he's put on the field. Kwity Paye and Dio Odangbo are solid pass rushers. Ebukam is a solid pass rusher. Like, on third down, you're going to have decisions to make, which is a good problem to have. Like, you're going to have, obviously, Buckner rushing up the middle. You probably have Dio rushing up the middle. And then you're going to have two edge guys. And it's going to be either Kwity, Ebukam, or Latu. And because, you know, you're Gus Bradley, so you don't blitz. So you got four guys, and that's a good problem to have. You'll have one extra guy. You keep able to keep guys fresh. I like it. I like the plan there. I like the pick. I mean, I'm a big fan of adding edge rushers, especially potential impact pass rushers. The way I feel about the medicals is, I don't know. They know more than I do.
That's where I'm at.
10 times more information about it. They have all their doctors do all this stuff. They've asked a million questions. Chris Ballard said he did. Like, if he's wrong, he's wrong. But I can't say he's going to be wrong, because I have no idea. I'm not a doctor. And second of all, I haven't seen all the medicals, so there's just no way for me to comment on this. It seems like maybe a small risk, but I don't know. I mean, again, if they don't think it is, Chris Ballard's not usually the type that takes risks on these draft guys. There's been guys with medical issues before that he's just passed on because he doesn't want to take that kind of risk. So I tend to believe it's going to be okay. That's just maybe me being optimistic about it. But before we move off Latu, and I'm sure he'll come up later he'll come up on the next section here on my draft pick, but I do want to encourage everyone here to go read Jordan Rodriguez's story on Latu that came out, I think, about a month or two ago.
Right around like the combine.
Yeah, his backstory, how he rushes, his rush plan, it's phenomenal stuff. Jordan Rodriguez is obviously one of the best we have here at The Athletic, so it is well worth your time if you want to learn more about it. I know James tweeted it out. I think I retweeted him at one point, but go read it. It's fantastic, and we'll have more on Latu, obviously, coming up, but it's a great, great way to get yourself familiar with the Colts' number one pick. Okay, well, funny enough, that wasn't going to be my number one pick if I had the number one pick in this draft. I was going to go I'm, you know me, man. I'm an Anthony Richardson guy.
I know.
I'm all about the offense. So I'm not going to go with A.D. Mitchell either. I'm going to go with the trade up as my first pick and the number two storyline in this draft. I think it speaks volumes about what Chris Ballard knows he has to do. I actually think it's a good sign, frankly. I don't love the "we tried and failed" part of it, but
right.
it's not my favorite thing.
How hard did you try, Chris?
Yeah, exactly. And he said, we made big offers or whatever. I can't remember the exact words that he used, but we made big offers to try to move up. It was significant, substantial offers, I think is what he said, to try to move up. And again, I tend to believe that he did try to move up. I don't know what substantial means, but I think I'm going to spin this positive is how I feel about it. I'm going to spin it positive. Isn't that Chris Ballard? No, what he said in the pre-draft press conference was we have to protect Anthony Richardson, and not just protect him like offensive lineman, but protect the investment is do everything we can to make him succeed. It's a lot of what I've talked about, kind of how I feel about what the Bears are doing with like Caleb Williams and investing in receivers and offensive linemen there. Like, if you think you have enough receivers and offensive linemen, draft one more, draft another, keep adding. I don't even think that the Colts, I know everybody, receiver became this huge blown out need for the Colts during the pre-draft process, but I don't think it truly was a giant need. It was something that I wanted them to add another weapon for sure.
Yeah.
But like Michael Pittman Jr. is a very good receiver. Josh Downs is a very good receiver. They have Jonathan Taylor. It's not like their weaponry was like, we're not talking about like the Patriots here, okay? They have pretty good weapons already in place. Now, adding a guy like A.D. Mitchell to compete with Alec Pierce for that other spot is great. I'm a fan of the pick. I don't think it was as necessary as some were saying. But the fact that Chris Ballard said, you know what? Let's go get another one. Let's go get Rome Odunze. Let's go get Brock Bowers. And this is me speculating, by the way. That hasn't been reported. But it has been reported widely that they did try to move up. And Chris Ballard, of course, confirmed as much. We don't know exactly for who.
Yeah,
I would
putting
guess
two
it,
and two
it wasn't
together.
For attack. Yeah, it wasn't for a quarterback, for a tackle. I'm like, guessing, yeah.
Putting two together, 14 offensive players go off the board in the first 14 picks. Brock Bowers went a few picks before, so it doesn't really make sense. You know, if you wanted to move up and kind of snag him, you probably could have. But yeah. I think he was referring to he was asked directly if it was for an offensive player, and he said, I think you all can kind of,
it was 14 players picked in a row. I mean, like,
And
yeah.
So I think it was for a wide receiver just reading the tea leaves and also using – kind of common sense. And what are the biggest team needs? Not needs, but as you alluded to, the biggest team wants.
Yeah.
Your offensive line solid. Your tight end room is okay. It could be better, but yeah. I do think that, a dynamic receiver like Neighbors or Odunze, by the way, Marvin Harrison Jr. was never an option.
That can change
things for your offense.
We talked about what the price was. Like, it would have probably had to be a 25 first, the second. Ooh. So, like, you're talking about giving up your first next year, probably A.D. Mitchell and more to try
naming
to get
rights
Harrison.
To Lucas Oil Stadium.
I just don't think that was ever within the realm.
The Jim Irsay collection would have to, be auctioned off a few items. There's a few things that could have happened.
I'm sure the Cardinals will put out video and the Colts will put out video from inside the draft room. But I will say, like, it never looked like Monty Austenfort had any interest in trade. Like, I think there was a clip that said when he was calling Marvin Harrison Jr. saying it was always you, man. Like, that was, I don't think they had any interest in trading out of four unless they were like blown away. And again, you can't, I'm trying to be optimistic here. I don't think you can get on Chris Ballard because nobody traded out of the top nine picks. The first team to trade was the Jets at 10 and they traded back one spot. The board fell in a favorable way for the Colts to get a guy like Latu because there were six quarterbacks taken ahead of him. But I just don't think the board felt like they had to be thrilled, hopefully, that, that Bowers was there at 13 and they're thinking, okay, maybe we got a shot here. Like, the Raiders don't necessarily need a tight end. They drafted the Notre Dame kid the year before. The Saints really need an offensive lineman. They might not take him. Like, here we go. And then the Raiders took Brock Bowers, which, credit to them, best player available. They just went for it. I like the pick, but I just think I'm not going to get on the Colts for not making the move because I don't think it was feasible, but I do think I liked where Chris Ballard's head was at. I like that he was talking about trying to move up and trying to surround Anthony Richardson with talent, because as you've said, this whole offseason is about the pressure they're putting on him to take that next step, to match CJ Stroud, even to match Trevor Lawrence, to kind of get them over the top in the AFC South. And he thought, okay, if I can help him in this draft, I'm going to try to do it. Now, he didn't get stupid with it and try to send all, do the Ricky Williams trade and send all of his picks the one team to kind of make that deal.
Right.
He was smart about it. He added some offensive linemen, which we'll get to later, and he added A.D. Mitchell. And he, you know what? Board fell to him. Best defensive play. Like, I can think of there's an amount of pressure on Latu at this point. Like, Chris Ballard said, you are the best defensive player in this draft. There is no make no bones about it. Like, you are the best defensive player in this draft. We are picking you. We have our pick of the litter. You are the dude.
Well, I was going to say,
pressure
and,
on him.
You know, people can debate about whether that's true or not, but they feel that way because obviously he was the first defensive player taken. So this isn't, you know, are you telling the truth or not? No, I think he really feels that way because that was how the board fell.
Yeah, I totally agree. So anyway, I don't know how you feel about this. I want to ask what you think about the trade up being my number two storyline here. My number one storyline, I should say, but the number two in our draft. How do you feel about, what was your read on Ballard's talking about we wanted to move up for an offensive player?
I actually think that he wanted this question because I believe Kevin Bowen might have asked something about it. And he was like, yeah, we tried. And then another question was asked by Jake Arthur. And then Chris Ballard just like talked over Jake and went back to Kevin's question and was like, yeah, it was big offers. It takes two to tango.
Yeah.
You know, two teams, you know, and no one was moving. So he really wants to drive that point home because normally most GMs, and Chris Ballard is usually in the same boat, they just don't touch that stuff. Like, you know, hey, you know, we're happy to get the guys we got. You know, we'll talk about, you know, what really happened, what really went down versus hypotheticals. But he made it very clear, like, we tried. And I took that as a sense of, okay, again, looking at what's realistic, number nine with the Bears felt like the sweet spot for them to possibly move up into. I think anything higher than that would have been really, really costly. And so, you know, I looked at it like the Bears probably just didn't want to budge off Rome. And if anybody had been following the pre-draft process, he had flown out to Chicago. He had been training with Keenan Allen and Caleb Williams already. And so
Ryan Poles
said
he wanted to trade up for him. Ryan Poles said he really wanted to trade up for him. And Ian Cunningham, the assistant GM, had to hold him back from trading up for him. They wanted Odunze. That's
right. But that makes the point. And so if they're feeling like they have to trade up, what are the Colts trying to do to get someone of that caliber or one of the big three or one of the big two, I would say, because like I said, Marvin Harris Jr. is out of there, but one of the big two receivers. And so I personally think that this was a Twitter storyline because it kind of, you know, it's like, okay, you all say I'm the aggressive, I'm not aggressive enough. I tried, you know, tried and failed kind of thing. And I guess you look a little bit better if you say you tried to be aggressive and the other teams just wouldn't play ball. But as we all know, you can really move up if you wanted to. You just didn't feel compelled enough to do it. There's a fine line there. I'm not saying he should have just overpaid, but there is a certain agency that you retain as the other side of you know, the bargain or the other side of the bargaining chip, the debate, the deal. And so if they felt like they were going to get swindled, don't do it. But I do think that, you know, it's a little bit different when you're saying what you could have done or what you tried to do, because then it gets into like, how hard did you try? And we'll never know like what was really talked about, you know, what were the offers on the table? What was, you know, feasible, what was not, but, you know, I also don't blame, you know, Bell for saying that because I do think that it was realistic. You know, there's been times where some GMs might say something and you're like, I don't believe a word of this. You know, cough, cough, the Falcons, what's going on? Number eight, no idea what any of that means.
They could have traded back, would have been just fine, I guess.
Exactly. So I'm like, man, they, you know, in hindsight, you know, do the Colts thing. Maybe we go to number eight because this team is just completely foolish. But, you know, it is what it is. But I do think that it was an interesting storyline from the standpoint of just thinking about, you know, how much they might have valued Rome Odunze and Malik Nabers to add to this offense, because I do think that it would have been pretty dynamic. However, we'll get into some other storylines that kind of offsets maybe the burn of not making that move. And personally, I'm always like a trade up guy as a writer because it's less, you know, Zoom calls and less interviews and just, you know, less of a workload on me. So I'm always like trade up, go get Marvin Harrison Jr., get rid of every pick this year. And let's just, you know, all sit down and talk about, you know, the rest of the draft and look at everyone else struggling to get through it. But no, it was an interesting tidbit from him. And I did not expect Chris Ballard to touch on it that much after the draft.
before I let you make your pick, I will say that I kind of secretly don't think I'm gonna whisper this so Colts fans don't get mad at me, but like, I don't think you should give up your whole draft for a receiver. Like, I don't think this offense is built on like a, this is not going to be an offense that drops back and throws 650 times. That's not the way they want to play. And when you have, if you had Marvin Harrison, Pittman, Downs, like that's, you might be saying you want to drop back and throw it 600 times. And I don't think that's what Shane Steichen wants to do. I think he wants to run the ball a lot. I think, here's what I think. I think if you could tell him you're going to hand the ball to Jonathan Taylor close to 300 times, or you're going to throw it close to 650 times, I think he's going to say, I kind of want to hand the ball to Jonathan Taylor close to 300 times. Like, they want to be a team that runs the ball first and runs the ball down your throat. And obviously keeping Anthony Richardson healthy is priority, but I think they want him to run as well too. So like, I think they want this to look more a little bit like the Eagles offense, which by the way has two great receivers. I'm not saying they don't, but I think they want to be a little more run centric than, So I guess what I'm trying to say is investing all of your draft picks in trying to get a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. in the building, I'm not necessarily sure that's what the offense is going to be. So Exactly. Anyway, that's just like a side thought. Anyway, we're going to go on to the number three pick for you in this draft. James, make your selection here on your third biggest storyline.
Adonai Mitchell being mad. That's how I would describe it. He has a beautiful smile. I did see some smiles eventually. I was going through his Instagram and, you know, kids got a lot to be excited about, you know, made the NFL second round pick, not too shabby, but, I got the first question on the Zoom call with him, Jim. And I said, hey, I know you had to wait a little bit, but is the feeling at this point gratitude more than anything else? You know, softball question, didn't want to, you know, poke the bear, but I guess I did, because he was like, to be honest, I'm just pissed. And I'm like, oh, okay. What are you pissed about? What are you upset about? Is it because you had to wait? And he kind of like didn't really commit to it. He's like, you know, it is what it is. This is how it happened, you know. And then in a roundabout way throughout the rest of the interview, he basically was saying, I thought I should have been drafted higher. You know, I think that I'm better than maybe what my place said. You can just take that away from all of what he said in the interview. Like I said, didn't really smile at all. Very businesslike, very mild mannered, you know, and supremely confident, because I think Kevin Bowen asked him, you know, what can Colts fan expect from you, or what do you say are the best traits of your game, or something like that? He said, you know, what can Colts fans expect from you? In your game, and he said, you know, the best, or how would you describe your game? That was a question. How would you describe your game to Colts fans? And he said, shook his head like the best. And I was like, oh, okay. So I think a lot of that, and we'll get into it, stemmed from obviously having to wait, but then some of the stuff that came out about why he had to wait, the anonymous sourcing. I know that, and I'll just say, I mean, Bob McGinn had the story with the anonymous scouts saying that he had, you know, issues with how he took care of his diabetes and whatnot. We didn't ask AD Mitchell about that. I didn't really even know about that, to be honest, until after we got off the Zoom call and I was, you know, seeing all these reactions like, what is going on? And so maybe part of that was, you know, bothering him, because it did feel, in my opinion, a bit out of bounds, just because when I hear about character issues, I'm like reading through the beast, like, okay, did he do something like off the field?
Get arrested. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, did he, you know, was he a guy who like tried to fight a teammate or something? Like, so, and again, when it's anonymous, it just stings more, because you can't trace it back to, okay, who actually said this? Why'd you say it? And it does feel a bit cowardly. And I'll let you weigh in on what'd you think of Chris Ballard's rant, sort of in defense of AD Mitchell, who, the last thing I'll say on this, I know, you know, Chris Ballard got on his high horse and said, like, this is crazy what we do to these kids, and we talk down their character, and he's a good kid and all this other stuff. But they traded back, assuming that he would still be there, by the way. So I'm not saying that, you know, this is a bad move by Chris Ballard, but it does, like, his tirade loses a bit of steam to me, because it's like, if you were really this high on this kid, and you thought all of this was BS, you probably wouldn't have traded back and risked the chance of missing him. I believe they moved back from 46 to 52. That's not, you know, a little gap. That's a bit of a gap. And so, but overall, what'd you think of his message and some of the bleeps that I had to put in my story?
I wish I could swear on this podcast like Chris Ballard did. I hate it. I hate not Ballard. I hate the character stuff. I truly do. I think it's wildly unfair that Bob McGinn puts that stuff in his scouting reports because you don't give the kid a chance to respond. You don't even give somebody on his side a chance to respond. I don't like it. I really, really don't like it. Anonymous reporting is a tough business, and we are in it at The Athletic. Don't get me wrong. We do a lot of anonymous reporting. But I think for the most part, it's trying to be objective. You know, you try to get opinions on some of these things, but it's trying, you know, not objective. You're trying to be, you know, you're getting honest assessments of these guys without criticizing who they are as people. Criticizing who they are as players is part of the game. That's fine. Like, I get that. If you want to say they're terrible route runners and they're fine. That's whatever. I get that. You can't come out on the record and say that. But I'm with Chris Ballard, man. If you're going to crash these guys' characters, put your name on it or don't say it. That's what, and or get an anonymous source that says, yeah, I heard about all that stuff. I don't think there's anything to it. Like, I don't love the way that came across from Bob McGinn. That's not my favorite way of reporting at all. So I'll say that. So I am with Chris Ballard 100% on that. To your point about how convicted they are about him and trading back, that it's a valid point. I do think, again, I don't, it's hard to know how the NFL actually feels about him based on, because everyone's going to say he fell, right? And all these receivers were going to be taken ahead of him that we thought he'd get picked in the first round or early second, and all these other guys, Ricky Pearsall and Lam McConkey, and these guys went ahead of him. Maybe, but that was our pre-draft conceptions of notions of where they are. The NFL might not have felt the same way about him. Maybe the red flags, and I put those in heavy quotes, caused him to slide. Maybe. But maybe it's because he's not as refined a route runner as they would have liked to have seen. Or, you know, he didn't have great years.
He didn't have like a huge year in college. Like, his best year was last year, had 11 touchdown grabs at Texas, but never had a 1,000-yard season in college, which is hard to do. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, discredit his production, but he didn't have like that dominant season, even like some other, you know, picks that were taken after him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there are reasons he could have slid. And again, I put that in quotes down to 52. I just don't think that it has to be about the things that were reported on. So I like the fit a lot. As I think people that listen to this podcast know, Alec Pierce and I never saw eye to eye on his fit. I've just never been the biggest Alec Pierce fan. I think this Adonai Mitchell brings maybe a little bit more to the table than Alec Pierce was going to bring.
I think so,
but maybe
too.
Not. We'll see. I mean, again, and I like Alec Pierce. I just like Alec Pierce better. I think I've said it on this podcast. I like him better as a four, and now he is a four. I think he's a better four in the NFL than he was going to be a three or a two. And now that's where he's going to be, assuming Adonai Mitchell does the things that he needs to do to earn that outside spot. I like Adonai Mitchell. Seems like a guy who will respect somebody who's done it before him. Let me say that. I think coaching-wise, I'm not saying that he wouldn't take coaching or whatever. I just think if you get him in a room with Michael Pittman Jr. and Reggie Wayne, guy's going to learn a lot. Guy's going to learn a lot about route running, how to be a professional, all that stuff. I think that he went to an ideal spot to hone his craft. And I think a guy like Reggie Wayne will be the kind of guy who can say, like, you want to be the best? You want to be the dude? I've been the dude. I've been the best. Like, I'll show you how it goes, and then you can let's prove it. And so I don't know. I kind of like the fit for AD Mitchell. I like that he's angry too. By the way, I do. I know maybe this is like a Twitter thing or like a ridiculous. I like it. I like that he's angry. Now,
he was legitimately like mad that night.
Yeah, I like it.
And not saying that he was. And I mentioned he did say, hey, I'm very grateful to be here. I'm gonna be the best version of myself to the Colts. But when he says at the end of his interview, like, you know, this ain't no fun, this ain't no hobby, this is a job, you know, I'm going there to work, and I'm like, whew, the man's like, he ready to clock in right now. And so I think that, you know, you mentioned how Reggie and Pitt can sort of mentor him, get him on the right track, but I also go back to Shane Steichen. You know, when you have a brain like that, who is your play caller, he has some say in who you're going to draft offensively. You know what I mean? And so
He better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that he will take a swing on someone he doesn't believe could make it work, whether it's character, production, whatever. And so for what it's worth, we talked to Anthony Cowlin. That's how you say his name. They call him AC, one of the Colts' scouts, who was the area scout for A.D. Mitchell. And he said that they talked to everyone in the Texas, you know, building. This guy works hard. He practices hard. He cares. And the thing that AC kept repeating was, this guy believes he belongs.
You got to. You have to be a receiver in the NFL.
I'll even say this. What entices me the most about AD, besides, you know, obviously the physical stuff, how he's going to fit, the moment. When the moment was big, this dude showed up. 5 touchdowns in 5 college football playoff games over the years. Caught one in a national championship game here in Indianapolis to beat Alabama. And so while he might not have had the production, he has shown sort of that innate it factor, that clutch gene that people talk about. He's not afraid to make a play in big moments. And again, if you want this team to, you know, take a step forward, every game they win this upcoming season is not going to be by double digits. It's not going to be easy. You're going to need some people to make some big plays in big moments. And he's proven he can do it. And he's proven it time and time again. So much so that I'm like, oh, this isn't really just some one-off. No, if you've been, he started at Georgia as a freshman, you know, and had some plays for them, you know, and back-to-back championship runs. And obviously got to a college football playoff with Texas as well. So I'm excited to see him. And he is athletic as all get out. 9.99 out of a possible 10 on the RAS scale. And I believe it was like number 5, the fifth most athletic receiver prospect since they started tracking this stuff dating back to 1987. And so, he was built in a lab. He's 6'5", or 6'2", 205, running a 4.3. So, you know,
listen,
good luck.
You give me my pick of the Texas receivers and you say, hey, listen, Xavier Worthy ran a 4.21. That's awesome. But you tell me I get a guy who weighs 40 pounds more and it's a 10th of a second slower. I'll take the 40 pounds. That's just how I feel about
it.
He's
a big body Benz, they say. So
I'm not trying to hate too much on Xavier Worthy. It's just my personal preference as a wide receiver. But I like the bigger guys. I like the bigger guys. I like the guys who can play through contact a little bit more. And he needs to add some strength. Don't get me wrong. I think that's part of the knocks on him as a receiver. He needs to add a little strength.
Play strength was the phrase that Dane Brugler used. Like, play strength. He's strong, but it's like you got to show it on the field and kind of be a little little more contact balance after you catch the ball, yak, things like that.
You get him on a field with guys. I mean, you look at the attitude that Josh Downs plays with. That guy, feisty, like feisty out there. You watch Michael Pittman, the guy wants to fight. He wants to fight you when he's on the field and he wants to block. I love getting a guy like A.D. Mitchell in the room. And Alec Pierce, by the way, I should say, plays with that same kind of attitude. Maybe not as confident, but definitely once he gets on the field, wants to get you. I like putting A.D. Mitchell in the room with these guys.
He's confident. I've had enough conversations. He's just mild. He's just mild mannered and like a goody two-shoes receiver.
Yeah.
I've talked to Reggie about this. Alec got that dog.
Okay,
in him.
Good. You got to want the ball. You got to want the ball.
Say it as much, you know, verbally, but I'll never forget Reggie telling me that after every game last year and probably – for the rest of his time in Indianapolis, he said pretty much every game, Alec is going to be, you know, picking his head around the corner and looking at his office like, hey, man, I need the ball more, which is every receiver everywhere. So that's a good problem.
Yeah, man. I guess I want my receivers to want to kill you. That's what I want. And I think A.D. Mitchell wants that. And I think he's going to learn even more of that from guys like Pittman and Pierce and Downs and Reggie Wayne. So I like the fit and the character quote stuff doesn't concern me. I think he's going to the right place for him to develop. Sorry. It's funny. That wouldn't have been my number 3 pick either. You and I had a little bit of a different order here, which I like. It's good. It adds some spice to this draft.
It's your turn.
I'm deciding between. You know what? I'm going to flip. I had a pre-draft rankings. I had my own big board. I'm changing it up though.
Ooh, okay. We have a trade.
So I'll admit, I mean, we only have 2 storylines left. It's the corners and it's the offensive line. I had corners as my number 3, but I think you're going to be happy. I'm going to let that fall to you. I'm going to let that slide to you at number 5. And I'm going to take the offensive lineman, okay? I'm going to get this name right, I swear. Matt Gonsalves. I'm going to take that.
Gonsalves.
And Bortolini is easy to say because it's just a noodle, which is great. He's just an Italian noodle.
We were saying Tanner Bortolini sounds like an entree.
yeah, for sure. Restaurant. Oh yeah, it's an Italian dish. Absolutely. Okay. So you guys can read about the scouting reports of these guys in the Beast and everywhere else. It's and again, it's something I want to talk about, but it's not the main thing I want to talk about. Not surprisingly, the main thing I want to talk about is Chris Ballard protecting Anthony Richardson. That is, there are two points I want to make here. One is that he is investing in the guys who are going to keep Anthony Richardson upright and healthy for the foreseeable future, and not starters, because he didn't get, like, again, these guys aren't expected to start, but these guys are in the pipeline now. These guys are going to be learning from Brian Kelly, from Braden Smith, from Bernard Raimann, from these guys, and learning how to be professionals. And then when it's their time, they will be ready. Again, I go back to Howie Roseman and the way the Eagles tend to operate, drafting premium positions all the time, most of the time. They always, when Travis Kelce retires, they have a second, Cam Jurgens is coming in, second round pick, ready to play. Like, they had Jordan Mailata ready to play left tackle. They drafted him. Like, they always had a top pick or a top prospect ready to plug in when they lost a guy, Lane Johnson. Like, they're always prepared with a guy who's ready to play, and they can let somebody go and plug in the next dude. I like that mentality. I like that that's what the Colts are doing here, is getting Bortolini, Raimann in the building and getting them ready to play. I said Raimann. I meant to say Gonzalez. Getting them in the building, ready to play for when they need them. Because I don't know what Ryan Kelly's situation is at center going on beyond this. He hasn't signed a contract extension. He's only got 1 year left. It's been very good, obviously. But they need to have a future at that position. So I like that they are investing in getting in these guys here who don't have to play right away. And if they get hurt, by the way, if a guy like Ryan Kelly gets hurt, you have a decently invested, you have Wesley French as well, but you also have Tanner Bortolini. Like, these guys are ready to play. Like, if Raimann goes down or Braden Smith goes down, you have Blake Freeland, you have Gonzalez, who's going to slide. You'll probably end up not playing tackle. It'll probably end up sliding in the inside. But again, you have depth now, and you have not just like, hey, we signed this guy out of free agency. It was a one-year deal, like $2 million. Not just, hey, he was an undrafted free agent we kind of like. He's sticking around. You have day two and higher day three picks ready to invest in this line. That's why, honestly, if they had picked an offensive lineman at 15 instead of Latu, I'd have been like, I get it. I mean, they're not going to play right away, but I get it. Just because you want to keep investing in Anthony Richardson and making this offense hum. Shane Steichen came from a place, Philadelphia. Again, that's why I kind of keep coming back to it. He came from a place where they had a dominant offensive line and can do the things they want to do. I think giving him that dominant offensive line is why. So, am I saying these guys are going to make the Colts offensive line dominant? No, but they are going to make it solid and continue to be solid for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, both could be starters next year. I believe that Will Fries is also going into a contract year. So, we might be looking at the future a little bit early. And when you draft, offensive linemen, third and fourth round, especially in the third round, you're not drafting them to be just depth pieces. You're drafting them to be, players. And you kind of have to keep those things stockpiled, because you honestly never know. You think that your offensive line is going to be healthy. You hope that all the guys are going to be available. But like we saw last year, they rarely had their full starting five offensive linemen. And so assuming that one or two gets banged up, it doesn't hurt to obviously have some more in the chamber to help out. And obviously you got Blake Freeland, who's still, a swing tackle for them, someone who played a lot last year, got a good amount of experience. And so I'm looking forward to, getting to know, Gonzalez and Bortolini, and just talking to Tony Sperano Jr. about them, because he seems like he was very vocal about who he wanted them to go get. And both of them had glowing things to say about their new offensive line coach and what he might mean to them. So I'm excited about that. And I'll say that, the investment in Anthony Richardson adjacent things is never a bad investment, because he is the franchise, as Michael Pittman Jr. told us last year. He is the franchise. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, I want to add one more thing, was that I've criticized Chris Ballard's drafting prowess in the past on certain positions. Corners have been not so great. Edge rushers have been okay, not bad, but just hasn't really hit. Offensive lineman, he's done pretty well. Like, Braden Smith has worked out really well. Bernard Raimann's worked out pretty well. Obviously, Quinn Nelson's worked out really well. Will Fries in the seventh round's worked out well. Like, he's done a pretty good job of getting these guys. And now I'm looking at the depth chart, and I'm seeing, which, again, James will have a depth chart for you guys in the coming days. I think Wednesday is the plan for that. But I don't know. I'm just looking at, the guys behind the starters, and you're looking at Blake Freeland, like you said, swing tackle, fourth round pick. you know, the backup guard or backup center, Tanner Bordellini, fourth round pick. Another backup guard, Gonzalez, third round pick. Danny Pinner, you know, fifth round pick. Like they're not premium picks, but they're significant picks, and they've invested in the depth of the offensive line. And I just, like I said, I really like that. I really like that mentality of always having, you know, somebody in the chamber, somebody ready to come up and play, whether it's an injury or somebody leaves in free agency. So I'm a big fan of that. But we've talked about the offensive line. I saved you your sweet spot, but I think you could have, this could have been your number one pick, and I wouldn't have been surprised. And you get it all the way at the bottom of the draft here.
I know. I'm trying to change. Okay. I'm trying to see the vision with Chris Ballard, but no starting caliber cornerbacks in this draft. No cornerbacks until Micah Abram in the sixth round. I know that Jalen Simpson, they were kind of listing him as a cornerback, but just talking to Ballard and, you know, some of the other people involved in the process of getting him, they see him as someone who can be pretty versatile on the back end. So I wouldn't pencil him in as a cornerback. I personally see him as probably a safety, but yeah, I wasn't completely surprised just because Chris Ballard told us that he believes in his young cornerbacks. And I was like, all right. So when we got to maybe the fourth round and there was no cornerbacks, I was like, oh, this guy's for real. So that is sort of big news to me, because now, and I wrote this in my post-draft takeaways, the question becomes, is it Dallas Flowers or is it Jalen Jones, or is it, you know, a veteran? He did, you know, kind of keep that door open. But I personally view those comments as like, could they sign a veteran safety versus a veteran cornerback? There's still some out there, you know, Steven Nelson, Stephon Gilmore. But for the time being, you know, talk about rosters and depth charts, the depth chart is relying on two of those, one of those guys being a starter. And so that's very interesting to me, because I do think that it is a need that I probably would have addressed more this offseason. Because it's just hard for me to look at what kind of happened last year. And granted, they had a bunch of injuries, and just think that it's all going to work. Like, I think proven commodities at that position are vital. And I think that, you know, you don't want to, this is my, I guess, fear, is that the Colts have, you know, a solid season, but they have two or three losses where they didn't have another cornerback to kind of hold up, and he got picked on, because we saw that last year. And again, injuries were a big factor to that. Daryl Baker Jr. was out there at one point. You know, Tony Brown was out there at one point starting. So I get all those things, but I really think that they, you know, should have addressed this by now. But I mean, this is where I'm like, again, you see these players more than me. I imagine he evaluates them a lot harder and harsher than me. And in fairness, Dallas Flowers was pretty good through his first four games last year before he got hurt. And so maybe they're, you know, just that, you know, convicted or convinced that he or Jalen Jones can be that guy. Obviously, if they are, it's a lot cheaper. So that's a factor as well. But man, I really think that, you know, there's a chance we could look up a few months from now and I'm calling Chris Ballard a genius for not, you know, listening to me, or we're saying, hey man, we told you this before about the offensive line and it just crashed and burned right before our eyes. So we'll definitely see, because I think that the secondary has to be better than last year. They give up way too many explosive plays. And again, you're dealing with, you know, some quarterbacks who are talented, man, and they're not going to, you know, let you just try anybody out there and you survive. They're going to go after, you know, any weakness that you have. And I think their biggest weakness right now in this defense is probably cornerback, that third cornerback spot, and probably free safety, because they don't really know what they're doing yet and who's going to start that position. But a little bit surprised. And then obviously even more surprised that the cornerback that they finally take is, you know, a shorter guy. You
He's
know,
a slot.
Yeah. RAS score is a, you know, 3.70, really low for what, you know, they usually go after. But in fairness to Micah, Chris Ballard did say that he was very productive at Marshall. He was. Over his last three seasons, I believe he had 50 pass breakups and like 11 interceptions over his last three seasons. So he's always around the ball, and some of that stuff you can't teach. He's also the cousin of former, you know, Colts cornerback Tim Jennings, who also was in Chicago when Chris Ballard was in Chicago.
I was saying former Chris Ballard draft pick.
Ballard told us he did not know that Micah Abraham was the cousin of Tim Jennings. So maybe that's a little serendipity right there. And I also want to tell him, well, we did more homework than you this time, my brother. And actually, dude, I can't even take credit for that. Dane, you're amazing. That was in there. So yeah, that was a bit surprising to me. But also at this point, I think I'll get off you know, the soapbox and say, hey, this is who they're rolling with. And at this point, I think I'm more interested in finding out, okay, who wins that job now? Who's the leader in that room or leader on the board for that position, rather than me saying for the millionth time, get a starting caliber cornerback. You know, Chris Bowers is like, shut up, James. I know what I'm doing. And, you know, we'll see how it works. But this is where I'm glad I'm not the GM, because there's always going to be decisions that we can look at and say we don't agree with. Should have done more on this position, less on this position, whatever the case may be. But now we'll finally get, you know, we finally get a clearer view of where this roster stands. And I'm excited to do my depth chart, because there are some questions about, you know, who stays and who goes, even between now and the season, and what their roles will be. So excited about that. But yeah, man, I think my draft haul, as they call it, was all right compared to yours.
Oh, you always gotta slide that in. Let me first clarify one thing. Tim Jennings was actually a Napoleon pick by the Colts, so not a draft pick by the Bears. He played for the Bears, but I just wanted to make sure people knew I didn't mess that up.
There you go.
Second,
you go.
I'm gonna get to you in a minute. Second, I would say if I was putting on my Chris Ballard GM hat and you said, why didn't you draft a corner? He would say, I did. I drafted Laiatu Latu. that our corners aren't going to have to cover for nearly as
long. Right,
like
right,
that.
That's fair.
Passer.
That is fair. So, that is fair.
So I think that's what he would say, and I understand that. Mike Abraham, I will say, get him on the. He's going to be on the Kenny Moore training program. I think that's get him behind Kenny Moore, and hopefully you have your nickel of the future. I think that's part of that plan. Obviously Kenny Moore was a UDFA, so. That's kind of, you know, sixth round pick is a slightly higher investment. Though I just looked up Kenny Moore's RAS score, and he was 7.4 effectively. So certainly a little bit more, a better of an athlete than we're getting from Abraham. But doesn't really matter at this point. Just comparing.
Ever say at some point you gotta be able to play. We'll see.
I will say the Colts freed up some money ahead of the draft. They said flexibility. Chris Ballard didn't get more into it than that. Maybe they sign a safety or a corner in free agency. Listen, Chris Ballard, even when I covered
Andre
the Colts.
Andre Diggs, Justin Simmons, sign me up.
Yeah, when I covered the Colts, he was not afraid to dip into that second, I guess you call it a second or third or fourth or fifth wave of free agency. Eric Fisher was a guy that I kind of remember. You know, they had flirted with Charles Leno in that same offseason to play tackle. That would have been a better choice. But they ended up going with Eric Fisher, which did not work out well. But point being is he will sign an outside free agent that no longer – you know, has the comp formula free agent signing now is out the window. Any free agent that you sign doesn't mess with that. Not that that matters too much for the Colts. They didn't let a lot of their guys go. But that's kind of the way things are. That's why you're seeing some of these guys get signed now so quickly after the draft. Cause like we talked about at the beginning, like, you know what your depth chart is and you know who's on your team and who you're not gonna be able to get. So you're trying to fill those last few holes with some free agents. So, I will say that. And then I will get to, and we'll get to your little snide comment and just say that I think I did just fine. I only had two picks, to be fair, at this point. So,
I'm Chris Ballard. I always get more picks than the opponent, okay?
I will say I even went off my board. I felt the pressure of the draft, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to do something different. I'm going to do something crazy here. So I don't have regrets. Like I said, I love talking about offensive linemen. I love talking about investing in them, so I'm not going to regret that. But the corner, like I said, the corner thing is your baby, so I kind of, you know, I got to let you have that. So
there you go. That's true.
Before we get out of here, and I hope you guys enjoyed that little mock, not a mock draft. That was our draft. I hope you enjoyed it. James, you can kind of give people the rundown of what draft day is like, particularly day three. I think is more of, because I think people understand day one and day two is like, you know, they do make the pick, you go talk to the GM and the coach sometimes. I don't think Steichen wasn't there the first 2 days, right?
Right, so, just the last day.
So you do that kind of stuff, and you do have the Zoom calls, but it's not quite as chaotic as day three tends to be. So kind of give some fans a breakdown of what day three is like for you. And then, you know, some of the fun stuff that you heard on that day three.
Yeah, day three was obviously the busiest day. They had six picks on day three. And so obviously when you look at that from an interview standpoint, there's a lot of Zoom calls. You know, there's a lot of, okay, they drafted this guy. What do we know about him? And then when they're close picks, it gets even a bit tougher. So when they go from like 142 to 151, you think that's a lot of time, but it's really not when you're trying to do a bunch of Zoom calls, research the player, talk to the player, and then get, you know, did they trade up? Did they trade back? Where are they? Like, those types of things get a little busy throughout the day. And then at the end of the draft, after day three, they have Chris Ballard come out. They have Shane Steichen come out. And then they have the area scouts come out as well to talk about what they saw in these players. And so there's a lot of talking, a lot of yapping. And it is a long day. And by the end of it, your head's kind of spinning because you're thinking, I just got so much information. How do I, you know, put it back out there in a consumable fashion? So that's always difficult. But overall, it was a fun day. The Zoom calls were are always like the highlight of the weekend for me, because that's when we talk to the prospects, you talk to the players, and you get to know them for the first time. And so, like I said, Laiatu, who came in as well for an in-person, presser, great kid, super high character. Mom was there, siblings was there. His brother's taller than him, and so I was asking one of the area scouts if they were gonna, you know, draft his brother as well. His brother looks like his big brother. Honestly, I was like, wait a second, who is who? So he's a good athlete. I believe he played, you know, college football as well. So that was pretty exciting. AD Mitchell was upset. I think fans love that when, you know, oh, he's mad, he's gonna put it into the game. I don't think that AD Mitchell needs, to lie about that. I think that he will take out a lot of his frustrations on the field. So whoever's covering him, good luck. And then as far as some of the funner or more fun interviews, I thought that Tanner Bordellini was a funny interview. He showed us his mullet, and that was the most offensive lineman thing ever. I was like, yeah, this guy is going to fit in just fine. Big personality, fun guy. But they say he's like a mauler on the field. So he's another one, kind of like Pittman, where goofy, silly, get on the field, not so much. Anthony Gold, interesting pick. He was kind of picked because of the return rules changing. It's kind of a glorified punt is how Anthony Gold defined it. And some of the Colts area scouts admitted, like, no, not admitted, they acknowledged that, hey, that was a factor. We're trying to become more dynamic in that area. And Anthony Gold is a big time punt return player and someone who can make somebody miss. And so I think that he's going to add some value there. He's also like their backup slot. So he kind of fills that Isaiah McKenzie, void. Jalen Carlisle, I believe he has like a military background. Kid is, very nice, very humble. I told him, I said, hey, man, can you smile, or what's going on? It's so quiet there. But he said he was very excited and was, you know, going to celebrate with his family. He was someone who kind of bet on himself, was supposed to be, you know, an offensive recruit. And the only school that would really let him play defense was Missouri. Went to Mizzou, balled out, and obviously was an NFL draft pick. And then throughout the rest of the draft, Jalen Simpson, huge personality, fun guy from Auburn. We asked him, you know, he's like, who's all there? Who's celebrating the draft with you? And he's like, oh, not that many people, just 50. We're like, 50? That's a lot of people, brother. That's a lot of people. And so he was, you know, a lot of fun. He said he looks forward to facing all the, you know, big-time receivers. He named Tyreek Hill. He named Odell Beckham Jr. He named Devontae Adams. And I was like, okay, like, these are, you know, already giving them bulletin board material, so you got to be able to back it up. We get on the field. And then Micah, it was interesting to hear from him. You know, how his dad played in the NFL. His dad also, I believe, coaches in like the CFL or something like that. And so he wasn't able to be with his dad, but his dad was like getting ready for a game where his son's getting drafted. So that was really cool. We'll get more into that as I talk to him this upcoming week, or I believe I should say next week. And then the last guy, Jonah Laulu.
Yeah, you got it. Yep.
He was the best interview. He thought he got pranked called when Chris Ballard called to draft him.
Go watch that video on Twitter. It's very funny.
Everyone check that out. And then when we talked to him, he was just giving us the whole spiel. Said he grew up, you know, seeing his mom work really hard to provide for him and his family. And he said when he's about 15, that's when it changed his perspective on how serious he should take football. And grew up in, I believe, in like Nevada, but then played, you know, 4 years at Hawaii, you know, bounced around at a bunch of different spots before finally kicking back inside at Oklahoma, playing defensive tackle and kind of thriving. And he ended Zoom call by basically saying, he knew he couldn't really play outside anymore or really play, you know, be some type of like linebacker or, a coverage defensive end. Cause he was like, man, I got lined up against this guy in college and he cooked me. And I was like, man, you can't tell people you got cooked in your first interview. And he's like, look, I'm telling you, he's like, man, got to the line. He hit me with some, and all because he said he was gone. So he was like, yeah, man, I got cooked. And so I just thought that was hilarious that he was so like excited, joyful, transparent. And those are the stuff that after a long day, Jim, it kind of puts it back into perspective. Like, yeah, it's a lot of work.
Sure, man.
Yeah, it feels monotonous. Yeah, some of it can be boring. But when you do hear that excitement from the players and you realize that they've, you know, made their dreams happen, which is, you know, this is some once in a lifetime type of stuff that they're doing. A lot of us dream of being athletes. Few of us get to actually do it at the highest level. And so that was fun. And it was a good way to wrap up the weekend. I'm excited to, you know, again, just real quick here, I will have plenty of content on all these guys coming up, undrafted free agents that they signed as well. So there's still plenty of draft content to come. It's just that the sitting at, you know, this table in the Colts facility, those hours are over, but we have plenty of work to do, and I'm excited to get to it.
I wanted to mention two things. One, I was kind of, when we were talking about the corners, I was just kind of looking to see if the quarterbacks they're going to face, and I noticed something interesting, which was that they're going to face four of the top six quarterbacks drafted. They got Caleb Williams, they'll be hosting, but they also get Drake May, the Patriots visiting. They'll get Bo Nix visiting from the Denver Broncos. And they'll get J.J. McCarthy with the Vikings visiting. So, interesting. Just a little tidbit. I don't know why I wanted to throw that in there, but I was just kind of looking. I was like, man, that's a lot of rookie quarterbacks they're going to face. So maybe the corner's not as, you know, not as big a deal, but going against some rookie quarterbacks. But the other thing I thought was newsworthy and wanted to mention here, because James is going to get to work on this very quickly now, is the Buffalo Bills have picked up the fifth-year option on Greg Rousseau, who was a defensive end drafted after Quiddy Pay. In the 2021 NFL draft. He has fewer sacks over his career. He's got 17 sacks to Quiddy Pay's 18 and a half. However, Rousseau had far more quarterback hits last year, 18. So I think I have to go look at his pressure rate, but I bet it was a lot better than Quiddy Pay's last year. But anyway, interesting. Interesting to say the least that the Bills are picking up that out. I think that might give you a hint as to what the Colts are thinking with Quiddy Pay, but anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there because I thought it was an interesting little tidbit. Any response to that as to how it might reflect on your on what you're going to write here in a minute?
I do think that it's something to think about. And I have to look at like what their team structure is as well. You know, assuming they didn't take Latu in the first round, probably factors in a little bit.
Correct.
But
for sure, there's a lot of, you know, juggling there. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, it definitely is something to factor in. And I'm sure Quiddy Pay is you know, if not talking to the franchise, he's looking around the league to see what happens and who gets what. So, you know, obviously if I was him, I would love to get that $13.4 million picked up, but at the same time, nothing is set in stone until it's set in stone. So we have until the second, which I believe is what, Thursday. And so,
Chris Ballard tends to take all the time to make these decisions, but hey, exactly. It might come out sooner. So that's why we're having James. We're going to get off this podcast. He's going to jump right into it to make sure we're ready to go. Anyway, well, that was a blast. The draft was fun. I, you know, winning the draft again is great for me. And so, I enjoyed that. This is the second little competition, James, I've had in the last couple of podcasts. Maybe we'll keep it going.
Undefeated.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Yeah. Yes, you're right.
Undisputed.
But no, it's a good one. And like I said, and we'll have more coming. Like you said, we'll have plenty of more content coming up. James will be writing about the UDFAs. We'll have a depth chart, Quiddy Pay content. Lots of good stuff coming up. Maybe we'll even get into some of the free agents they should add to some veterans, guys like you mentioned, Diggs and Simmons as guys that could be interesting. So lots more to come on the Colts. But until then, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.